yesterday's papers? Who wants yesterday's gun? Who wants yesterday's papers? Nobody in the world.
Hello, hello. Welcome aboard. Tonight I am in the hot seat here, joined by Andy Young, Jamie Holm, and we have the Liverpool Echo journalist James Pearce with us as well. We'll run through some topics relating to some interviews that he's had recently, the Leicester game, the upcoming Chelsea match, as well as his thoughts on some of the things that have happened relating to Liverpool over the last couple of weeks. It's the LFC Day Trippers. Okay, so first up, let's have a chat about the Leicester game, which I think we'll all agree was an excellent performance. First off, we go over to James, James Pearce, who we're joined by, delighted to be joined by you tonight. James, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Yeah, great, great. Listen, maybe you give us a little overview of what you thought. We'll go into a more detailed roundup and through the game as we go on. But let's have a quick rundown from you in terms of what you felt were the good and bad points of the game.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the positives massively outweighed any of the negatives. I think going forward, Liverpool were absolutely irresistible at times, and I think you could see in that game on Saturday, the benefits of that pre-season that Klopp had had with the players. I think probably more than any other point this season, it looked a really classy, slick, cohesive unit, especially when they attacked. And when you think, I know Leicester aren't the Leicester of last season, and of course they missed Kante, but I was trying to think when I'd seen Leicester look that ordinary, and I think Liverpool made them look ordinary. And Leicester's their amazing achievements last season was basically based on being so secure defensively and not giving away many chances. And yeah, Liverpool scored four, could easily have had six or seven with the chances they made, and it was a real obviously sense of occasion to the day with the new main stand opening and obviously the biggest crowd Anfield had for nearly 40 years. And I think the performance lived up to it. It wasn't still room for improvement. You think of that wobble they had before half time. I thought they actually started the game quite poorly as well, first 5-10 minutes, but over the course of the 90, you look back and I think most fans who were there went away with a real buzz, thinking, it does promise to be some ride this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was nice to see the team come out and give us a win when it's a memorable occasion, rather than some of the stadium-related games we've had in the past, like the last game in front of the Kop and such the like.
Yeah.
And I think you're right there. There really was. You could see it from the ex-players who were there. You could see it from the buzz around the fans who were there before the game. There really was a sense of occasion. And we got a performance that matched that.
Yeah, we certainly did. Yeah, I think that was the thing, wasn't it? When it clicked, it just looked so dangerous. And you think, there's just so much pace and creativity in that team. They achieved that pretty much on Saturday without Coutinho. You think of some of the link-up play between Mane and Lallana, and Sturridge, I think, was probably a bit of an unsung hero on the weekend as well. I thought he was absolutely excellent. Quite selfless as well. Someone who is accused of being selfish at times and not putting a shift in. I think he was very unselfish for the goal that he created brilliantly for Mane, and just in general with the shift that he put in. And Mane has obviously been an absolute revelation since he joined the club. I must admit, when Liverpool paid 30 million for him, I had my doubts whether he was quite in that calibre of price mark. But he looks worth every single penny at the moment,
and more.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing because I think so used to in recent years, so many new players needing time to adjust and settle to their new surroundings. You think of someone like Lallana, who I think he admitted making that leap from Southampton to Liverpool was huge for him. He said, that first year, the pressure and expectation of being at Liverpool every week, he found difficult to handle. Exactly the same with Lovren, really. At a very tough first year, struggled with the spotlight. Yet Mane just looks absolutely at home with it. And couple that with the fact that Firmino, you know, I think he was man of the match for me. I thought just, you know, absolutely outstanding in every facet of his game, you know, his movement, his touch, his vision, and, you know, the way he took his two goals as well, absolutely ice cool. And you almost think now it baffles you how Liverpool went and lost at Burnley, because if they'd managed to produce 5 minutes of what they produced on Saturday at Burnley, they'd have won that game. But you know, I must admit the table does look a bit more encouraging now than it did before the international break.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think from that point of view, we've got three tough away games. You know, everybody's spoken about Spurs and Arsenal away. I think you know, Burnley will surprise some teams at Turf Moor this season, and they will take points off some of the bigger sides as well. So we've got that game out of the way as well. That's my little way of feeling good about the fact that we got beaten 2-0, to be honest with you. But Andy, let's bring you in then for the moment. What were your, you know, you're the romantic, and when it comes to all of the day trippers, you are the romantic of us all, you know. So how did you feel? Like, were you feeling a little bit emotional before the game?
Like, we're talking about the stand here.
We're talking about the stand.
You see a lot of negative stuff on Twitter and that about, oh, this fucking stand. I'm sick of hearing about the stand. It's all about this stupid stand and everything. But, like, since day one, since there was, like, pics were released of what it's going to look like, you know, I was really into it. And I couldn't get enough coverage about the stand.
You love, you know, the trust,
big fan, like, of the trust.
Everything, you know, just, yeah, as you see it kind of coming together and all. Now I loved all that, so I kind of likened the occasion to the Kop's last stand. We didn't even make such a big deal out of the brand new Kop grandstand when it was built.
Yeah,
you know, I don't really I remember the centenary going up, but I think in the age we're in now and the kind of PR,
yeah, it's the PR and the social media on machine, isn't it?
Yeah, it was
everything's magnified, yeah, and blown, like, up.
Fairway put a huge kind of like emphasis, and they got everyone speaking about it. Like, they got social media speaking about it, and they got Sky speaking about it.
Yeah,
you know, they got everyone, like, you know, and all the newspapers are on about the new Anfield, the new stand, and the players coming out about it. And
it's a feel good fact.
Even Klopp was mentioning things. So yeah, it was great, and you know, it created a really, really big occasion on the day. And I mean, walking up and catching the first glimpse of it and all, like, it was exciting, you know. So
yeah,
it was an extra element to it. Obviously, you're going over and you're watching the game, you're looking forward to that too, but it was an extra little kind of,
where were you sitting?
Side act in the Kop.
You're in the Kop.
Yeah.
Did you cry? Are you going to cry now?
Do you want me to?
He seems to be glazing up a little bit, doesn't he?
He looks like I do when I watch DIY SOS. Sob stories at the end.
Yeah, yeah. No, so it was good. It's good. Like, it's absolutely massive. Yeah, you just have to see it in person to actually appreciate the size of it. Like, no picture is going to really get that across. Like, I know when they take a big aerial photograph, it looks massive. It does look massive.
Yeah.
But it's not till you're standing below on the outside looking up to the height of the roof. I've never seen it. And, like, I've been to the New Camp and I've been to Wembley and it's so fucking high up there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I saw it last season. I was at a few games. Obviously, I wasn't there yesterday. So, or on Saturday, should I say. But last season when I was at it, walking through, you know, when you're walking to the Kop, you had to walk through, or you walked around by that little side part of it.
Yeah.
And you were just looking up at it going, Jesus Christ, it's huge. But
no, it's beautiful.
That's good to hear, because I knew you were there, so obviously I wanted your opinion on the
everybody you could see. I mean, everybody was taking pictures, even the locals, even your hardcore locals had their cameras out, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It wasn't just a day
trip. And the game itself,
it was brilliant. Well impressed with the fact that Liverpool's pressure came in waves. Like, you know, against Arsenal, we probably only really played well for about 20 minutes, like, really, really well.
Top level.
Those kind of waves of pressure, like, that Leicester just could not, like, contain Liverpool, came in waves, probably about four or five waves of that throughout the game, which was really good. Like, so it's nice to know that they can absorb a little bit of pressure or just play around the back for a while. Now, we look a little bit dodgy when we're doing that at the back. I don't know whether you kind of noticed it. They still look very fragile. Like, Lucas's thing is an isolated incident, but it just seems when they're stroking around the back, we're an accident about to happen.
I didn't actually feel that way. I looked at them trying to, especially in the second half when they were really trying to stretch.
It's just the loose passes that Leicester of last season might have been nicked in a bit quicker.
I get
a bit quicker with on the press or whatever. Yeah. You know, like there was loose touches out there.
And,
you know, 10 and 15 yard balls made a little bit
more difficult than they
should have been. But then Leicester had their little spell where they could have scored again. They had the goal and they hit the top of the post and in the second half did a small. But then Liverpool just put pressure on again and. Once they're coming forward and they're playing like that, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And just like James was saying, like if Firmino for me was man of the match by a good bit. There was lots of good performances out there, and another day there would have been man of the match performances. But Firmino for me stood out. Like it's probably the first time I've been blown away by him.
Right,
like blown away by him. Brilliant, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
Quality.
Let's drill into a little bit more detail then, and we'll move over to you, Jamie. You know, from that point of view, let's start from the back as we often do, and let's look at Mignolet and the back four. What were your feelings? Obviously, it was a last minute change or close enough to last minute change with Lovren suffering the injury to his eye. Lucas came in. I suppose I'm not going to get hugely involved in the chat tonight because we've got four of us here. But for me, I thought Lucas actually had a good game, apart from the mistake, which, yes, it was silly of him to make that mistake. But as has been pointed out by Howard Webb during the game and then by many others afterwards, the goal shouldn't have stood anyway because the player encroached in the box while the ball was still in the box from the keeper. So Lucas technically should have had a lot more time on the ball to recover from his mistake either way. Mm. But other than that, I thought he had quite an assured game. Matip was excellent again.
Yeah, so. I actually like Lucas when he's slotted in at centre-back for us before. I think the one thing that I really like about him is his passes from the back are really incisive, and he actually plays through the lines of the opposition, which means that we can get from defence into attack very, very quickly. If you look, I think it was the second goal came from his pass into Firmino's feet, who dropped deep.
Was it the first goal?
And then the two lads were spinning in behind. For him to have the confidence, because he's so used to having his back to play, it's very rarely that he actually gets the ball, has the whole game in front of him, so he can actually pick more incisive passes. Mistake aside, which, to be honest, it was poor. Look, there's no two ways about it. It was poor. But at the same time, I think Andy touched on it. Mignolet's passing from the back. I know he's instructed to play the ball short, but there has to be an element of choosing when to do that. For example, Lucas had two men closing him down when the ball was played to him. Yes, his touch should have been better. Ideally, he should have just hooked it out. Mm. But he shouldn't be putting him under that pressure. And a couple of times, the only times we had shaky moments came from Mignolet choosing to pass it when players were under a little bit of pressure. But aside from the mistake, I thought he was excellent. I thought Matip was a class act. I think he looks combative in the air. I think he looks good on the ball. He likes to come out with it. And he's just a calming influence across a defence that usually doesn't look very calm. And then just to touch on Milner, who I thought was excellent again. I think Klopp has looked at those two key areas, defensive midfield and left back, and he said, okay, I can't get the players I want, so I'm going to look at the players we have and I'm going to look at the attributes those players have. If you look at James Milner, or you look at what would you want from a left back, you'd want somebody that's good on the ball, can read the game, is defensively sound, and can get up and support and attack. James Milner can do every single one of those things. He just needs to get used to where he should be at certain times in the game. That'll take a couple of games.
That's a coaching element.
And it's easy to fix if you're a smart player. And I think James Milner is, and I think he was excellent again.
Yeah.
And I just think the pleasing thing for me is, as Andy said there, we're never going to be able to play this high-tempo game consistently. But we did it in four or five waves and were very, very clinical when we did it. We looked a little bit ropey towards the end of the first half. But coming into the second, our game management was much better and we kept the ball for long periods of time. So I actually thought we looked quite solid considering they had Vardy up top, who's difficult to mark. I don't think they've really put us into too much pressure, other than the daft goal and the save from Mignolet. So I thought we looked pretty solid at the back.
I would definitely agree. And James, for you, did you see encouraging signs in the centre of the park? Because I suppose what I've felt over the last few games is that Henderson has probably been left a little bit exposed in a position that he's not very familiar with. And he's growing into that position. And I think this was for me, definitely his best game in that role. But I think Wijnaldum also improved this game and gave him that extra little bit of cover. And the actual work rate from Adam Lallana, both going forward and getting back, was huge. Did you see, I assume you were at the game, did you see a marked improvement in that?
I did, I think that was, by far Jordan Henderson's best performance of the season. And I was pleased for him because I think, he had such a tough season last season, and I was down at Melwood to do an interview with him last week, and he was very honest really when he said, he didn't feel like Liverpool's captain. He said for most of last season because he was so desperate to contribute, and I think it became a bit of a vicious circle as well really, because I think he ended up coming back too soon a few times and ended up playing when he wasn't fully fit, and then not doing himself justice, and then wanting to try and make up for it, and the injuries were getting worse and worse. He wasn't able to contribute, and he was in a pretty dark place. And I must admit, I had my doubts whether he could play that number six role. He spoke last week about how he said that Klopp spent a hell of a lot of time on the training ground with him, talking him through it, and Bovac as well, in terms of his positional play, and telling him not to overcomplicate matters and to play to his strengths. And it seems strange to me that to almost see him in that role initially this season, because I've always associated Jordan Henderson as his strengths. He's such a good athlete. The energy he gives you, bursting through and through lines and all the rest of it. And I wondered whether he could deliver in that role, but certainly Saturday was a huge step forward for him. I thought he ran the game at times. His use of the ball was great. He played his range of passing kept Liverpool ticking over really well. Snapped into tackles, and it did work better. I still Wijnaldum probably I was less impressed by. I still think there's a lot more to come from him. I think probably, you obviously someone like Mane has set the place alight since he's joined the club. But I still think Wijnaldum's still getting used to a new club, new teammates, and trying to find a real role in that side. But certainly, I think when you consider that's an area of the park that a lot of fans have been very concerned about so far this season. It just functioned so much better. And Lallana was outstanding again, just ahead of those two.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I suppose it's Henderson playing with let's take a little bit of a sidestep, because you've, as you said there, and it was something I was going to get to later in the pod, you did actually go and interview Jordan Henderson in the last week or so. And obviously, you'll have come away from that with an impression of him, of where he's at the moment. And his game on Saturday goes to show how he is learning and developing in that position, like from getting back and covering Lucas on a couple of occasions, and just covering the defence in general, to being able to, one of the things he was criticised for was not being able to get the ball out from under his feet quick enough. But the speed at which he was able to turn the play and play that ball to Mane, I think it was, for our third goal.
Storage, he played the ball over the top.
No, I'm talking about the one the fourth goal, wasn't it? He played the ball into Mane when he went around Schmeichel.
But he also played that looping ball over the top.
He did for Storage. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just saying, he really showed the full range of that role. And that's probably, we're talking about Wijnaldum, that's probably without his main midfield partner beside him, you would have to think that the idea was to play Henderson and Chan together. But how did Henderson come across to you from, let's say, mentally? You know what I mean? Did he look like he's ready for the season ahead? He sounded like it in the interview, but how did you feel about it?
Yeah, he was very upbeat, and I think it was just nice to see, because there was a number of times when I did interviews with him last season, and you knew just how much of a struggle it was. I think fans probably didn't really appreciate just how much pain and discomfort he was in. He effectively had a lot of sleepless nights with the pain in his heel. I think he said it was akin to feeling like someone was shoving drawing pins into your heel over and over again. And it was a problem that Liverpool couldn't get to the bottom of. There was no quick fix. And they spoke to, I remember him doing an interview where he talked about, you know, he'd even spoken to people at the Royal Ballet, because, you know, there's something that ballet dancers have issues with their heels, and anything, you know, scoured the world looking for answers. And, you know, in the end, he had a lot of painkilling injections just to try and get him through it. And, you know, it was a case of waiting effectively for the band. I think plaster fasciitis is the kind of medical term for what he had, but there was the band on the bottom of his foot. It eventually ruptured, which I think happened. I think it was a Sunderland game in over the Christmas period, and it was something that dogged him again in the second half of the season. Then obviously he had the knee injury as well. So it was, I think, you know, he said that now, you know, that heel problem is 100% gone. He said absolutely no discomfort whatsoever. He was in a good place. And Jordan Henderson is one of those footballers that I think, you know, fans, you know, a section of fans will still question, you know, his credentials and all the rest of it. I think he knows that, you know, it's an ongoing battle to prove you belong at Liverpool, and I don't think that's going to change for him anytime soon. You know, having the armband just increases that spotlight on him. But, you know, this is a player who's, you know, continually proved, you know, that he can, you know, triumph against the odds, if you like, because, you know, he had a really, you know, you think of that horrendous first season he had at the club, to, you know, and then obviously Brendan Rodgers was prepared to flog him to Fulham in part exchange for Clint Dempsey. And, you know, if he wanted the easy way out, he could have taken it then. He didn't. And then, you know, obviously then with Rodgers then moving on, you know, he had a lot to prove to Klopp, but he's done that. And, you know, again, earlier on in the summer, there was some talk about would Klopp change the captaincy, and he hasn't. You know, I asked Klopp about Henderson's role a couple of weeks ago, and he was absolutely adamant that he's the right man to lead the club, and he's the right man to play centre midfield. And I think it was just a positive day all round for Henderson.
Did you see the bit where Klopp, Henderson absolutely smashed somebody with tackle line, and Klopp, it was like we were after scoring a goal. Klopp absolutely was up and jumping around the place at him, absolutely planting somebody. It was great to see. Jamie, sorry, you wanted to jump in and ask James something.
It was just to follow on from what James said. Actually, there was a couple of things that impressed me about Henderson in the last couple of weeks. And first of all, it was, if you hear the way he spoke to James, he actually spoke with authority, and that's the first time for a long time I've actually heard him speak like that. He was speaking like a captain, like he believed he should be captain. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, he's now playing injury free. He had a poor game against Burnley, where he's learning a new position, and you touched on it there, Steve-O. It's a very different concept playing that deeper role, because for a number of reasons. And he was taking too much time on the ball. He was getting closed down. He wasn't passing forwards, and he was slowing play a lot. The pleasing thing for me was, if you look at the following game, he was moving the ball so much quicker against Spurs.
Yeah.
His head was up. It was on a swivel. He was incisive in his passing. He dominated a midfield that contained a Wanyama figure who is cited as one of the best central midfielders in the league, to many. He was really impressive. And then he's kicked on again. So what that shows to me is he's able to take instruction and learn and grow from it. And he's now playing as if that's his midfield. He dominated that game. He set the tempo. He was aggressive. He was the sort of fulcrum to everything we did that was good. And just to echo what James said, I actually do think he is the right man for the job. I actually started to think, watching the game, could he do that role for us on a longer term, and would they be prepared to let Emre Can off the leash a little bit more and maybe have Can play as the eight, if you will? Because the one thing that it comes clear to me is Henderson's finishing is absolutely terrible. And this way, I think you restrict Emre sometimes if you play him in front of that back four, because he does want to burst forward. He does want to contribute more. Could you be looking at longer term playing Henderson in that role, keep things neat and tidy, and let Emre really shine?
I think it's going to come down to basically who's shown with the most kind of goals, like, you know. And Henderson's chance he missed was just...
It wasn't great.
I would still think Henderson's finishing is better than Chan's.
Yeah,
like,
well,
you have to see
Henderson scored loads of goals.
He scored some absolute crackers.
Yeah, he's gone on the end of plenty of you know, goals. But
and I want to see him skip.
He missed twice.
Yeah, 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 that's true.
He missed twice. He missed a goal by two lengths. You know,
had there been a goal stacked on top of the goal, he'd still missed that.
He'd have still missed. And I think Henderson normally does a little bit better in that position. But in saying that, he still got there.
Yeah,
that's what we want. Well, we want bodies getting forward, and he was in such space at the edge of the box.
That was one thing about the midfield, is there were so many runners.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Wijnaldum, and I agree with what the lads have said. I don't think he was great. I think he was better than what he was. Yeah. But the thing for me that really shone out is every time we had an attack, he was busting a gut to get in behind them. And we at times we had three, four runners getting into the box, and Leicester, they didn't know who to pick up.
Yeah.
It was like a swarm.
Yeah. Well, when it did get cleared, there was always someone mopping up. Like, we were forced to clearances, you know, so Klein was sold fast forward, and Milner, and not recklessly, but they were there to pick up balls.
They were in the position. Yeah, they were in the right spaces too.
When Alan didn't impress me, but he was a body in there, and he was a significant body in there.
He's got a lot of energy.
Yeah, strong.
He played, you know, I think he was clever in how he played the pass for Lallana's goal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he hasn't bowled me over in there, but I don't know if, listen, none of us know whether that's where he's bought to play. Mm-hmm. I think he might just be doing a job there whilst Emery Chan is out. And you were talking about maybe him, let's call it the six and the eight, you know, Chan is a little bit more further forward. It might just be a case where, boy, we have two players capable of doing both jobs.
They go when they want.
And they're able to commute. And wouldn't that be absolutely perfect?
They're different players, but they play the same role almost. They're both,
they're capable
box
of
to box, and they both have a bit of a pass about them, and, you know, they're similar but different in a lot of ways.
Yeah, from that point of view, and listen, let's move a little bit further forward. For me, yet again, and I used to sit here week on week and give out shit about this man, but Adam Lallana was absolutely superb again.
Quality.
He really.
I'm trying not to feel smug. I've kind of batted, you know, I've been in team Adam Lallana for a while, but he's been superb, like an absolute revelation. Yeah. It's just nice to see him getting the credit that he deserves.
Well, listen, as with any player, if you're wrong, as with any fan, if you're wrong about a player, you have to hold your hands up. And I don't think it was anybody that was giving him a bit of stick. I don't think it's that they were wrong. Mm. I think at the time he wasn't playing anywhere near the level that he's currently playing. Mm. But if you're still finding fault with his game, then...
I think it was more that they were writing him off as a Liverpool player. And we've seen it time and time again. And James said it there. You know, it takes a while for certain players to acclimatise for playing, you know, for a big club. Lovren and Lallana, the likes. Firmino, you know, he hasn't looked great in the past. He's drifted in and out. He's got undoubted quality. But he wasn't showing it too consistently, whereas now all of the players like Roberto Firmino and Adam Lallana have been miles ahead of everyone in our side. The two of them have been excellent.
And his strike was absolutely
it was quality,
perfect. Like, he probably gets a little bit of stick for not putting his foot through the ball enough. You know, sometimes he can have a little bit of a weak shot and it can just be a little bit of a letdown, but he absolutely just,
he's taken that whole Cruyff turn to another level. Like, I know people used to say he just does Cruyff turns in space, like, you know, where he doesn't need to do anything, but it's his way he feels comfortable taking the ball. It's unbelievable, and there's nobody else playing football out there that actually does these movements.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing. Like, ball's dropping out of the sky, and his instinct is to kind of take this backward touch.
Yeah.
And it gets him free.
Yeah,
so
it does.
Often.
It turns him away
and
from
it's his way.
Yeah. A lot of the time. Yeah.
So, like, especially since Klopp has come in, he's continued to play the way he plays, but he's starting to contribute more.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I'm jumping ahead on the agenda here, but I think it's, if you're looking at who plays in the middle now...
Sorry, suggesting we have an agenda for some reason.
That would require
very
being
silly
organized.
Of you.
Go ahead. But if you're to look at, you know, the side moving forward, and James said before there about Coutinho didn't even play.
Yeah.
I actually feel Coutinho is better in the midfield three than he is in the front three, but you can't take that shirt away from Adam Lallana now.
No.
You know, so to have these options now is something we haven't been used to.
Well, I said it before, like, Coutinho is a luxury player, and if Sturridge is going to play in the team, he's quite a luxury player as well.
You said that a couple of weeks ago.
I know it's
really
probably harsh to call Coutinho and Sturridge passengers, but that's what they are sometimes. They don't contribute constantly in a game. Like, say, comparing Firmino and Coutinho, like, for me, Firmino is just constantly contributing to the game, whereas Coutinho was totally, you know, out of the game at times, but
every
he carries
game,
a serious, serious threat, and he'll win games for you. So can you picture Klopp in an important game playing both Sturridge and Coutinho? Because it takes a lot away from it.
Not necessarily with the options we have, because as you said,
here's the
question.
Not with Lallana doing so much, with Firmino doing so much, with Mane working so hard.
Well, there's no place for Mane, Firmino, Coutinho, Lallana and Sturridge in the side. That's just, you know what I mean? You're just getting into a point whereby you have too many attacking players. You're right about Mane is just not getting dropped. You're right about Firmino being involved. Lallana is exceptional. But to me, and we'll jump ahead because I wanted to talk about Firmino and Mane, but for me, Daniel Sturridge had the game that everybody was waiting for him to have.
Yeah.
And I'd bring you in here, James. You know, it just seemed as though everybody's been crying out for him to just show us that he could do this again and come back in and make an impact. And that's exactly what he did on Saturday.
Yeah, he certainly did. I'd go along with that. I think he looked like a man with a bit of a point to prove, because he was certainly wounded before the international break by being left out, you know, down at Tottenham. I spoke to him after that, the League Cup tie at Burton, when he obviously came out with the quotes about, you know, I wouldn't say I'm happy to be playing out wide. You know, everyone knows I'm best through the middle and all the rest of it. And I actually thought probably those comments were blown out of proportion a little bit, in terms of it was actually quite refreshing to hear a player just be honest and rather than, you know, just spout some cliche about our player. I'm happy to be anywhere for the team. But you know, he also seemed, you know, his body language wasn't great that night. When you think for someone who'd come on and scored a couple of goals and, you just thought, he didn't look like he was in a great place, but that was a very different Daniel Sturridge at Anfield on Saturday. I thought, obviously, yes, he was playing through the middle in the role that he favours, but I think he answered, you know, a lot of the things, probably not only the supporters have been asking, but probably Klopp himself, because, you know, it's no coincidence that when Liverpool have gone away to the bigger games, if you like, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal away and Tottenham away, that story, quite often it's been Firmino has been that, you know, that number nine, because of the way that he sets the tone with the shift that he puts in and you know, the way that he works and everything, you know, he's the focal point of the attack and everything goes from there. And, you know, I think people have almost, you know, were suggesting that, you know, Sturridge is just, you know, a bit of a luxury that, will score you his fair share of goals. But, you know, I think he had to prove that he can fit the Klopp blueprint. I think, you know, that's still an ongoing thing, but I think that was a big step forward for him at the weekend, because, like I said, you know, it wasn't just, you know, the assist for Mane is just absolutely top class. You know, I think if Messi does that, you know, it's shown every 3 minutes on Sky Sports News all week. But what impressed me most was the fact him doing what people question whether Daniel Sturridge can do or not, and that is absolutely working his socks off for the team, tracking back, you know, very unselfish as well with some of his movement, creating space for other players. I think he was involved in, you know, creating the opening for Firmino for the opening goal. It was just a really positive performance, and, you know, he came through the mix zone where we get interviews afterwards, and he looked like a very different man compared to the one I saw at Burton a few weeks before.
Yeah.
Yeah, James, it's Andy here. What do you think? I mean, the game he had at the weekend, it was kind of like the compromise that him and Klopp need to find, like, in order for them to have a relationship in the future, in order for them to stay at the club, in order for Klopp to feel he's useful to his system and setup. And like you say, Sturridge kind of looked a lot happier. Do you think that's something that could be permanent now?
I certainly hope so. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I think that's the thing. I'm sure Klopp will have said to Sturridge, you know, that is what we need to see from you every time. You know, it can't just be a one-off. You know, I'm sure when they review the footage and go through everything like they do, that, you know, Klopp will be, you know, if he hasn't picked up on everything the first time around, he'll be absolutely delighted with what Sturridge gave him. But yeah, he has to. I think that's where Sturridge is at the moment is, you know, and I think the reason why he was left out down at Tottenham is Klopp very much sees it as like a horses for courses approach, and different players suiting different needs depending on the opposition, and, you know, but you know, Sturridge has, you know, he has to prove to Klopp that, that he can be the man for, well, for Chelsea away. I think that's going to be the fascinating thing this Friday night. Does Sturridge keep his place? Because you know, that is the kind of game where he, you know, he has been overlooked, and you know, you wouldn't, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Coutinho could come back in for him, and he goes with Firmino through the middle again. But you know, I think Sturridge has staked a very strong claim to keep his place on the back of the weekend.
Yeah, he certainly has. I think Firmino almost played the centre forward position the weekend, and Sturridge was more like the link up player. You know, so
I think for me, with the one thing I noticed about Sturridge is he actually seemed to run freely again for the fit. Like, I haven't seen him really let loose and sprint after something, run beyond. Yeah. And there was a couple of times in that game where he really burst away with pace. And I think Michael Owen touched on it after the game, as somebody with pace and who had suffered from muscular injuries. Mm. Sometimes you hide a little bit. Sometimes you don't want that ball. You don't want to burst, a burst of pace because you worry of something popping or going. Mm. Whereas for the first time, there was not only unselfish running, but there was also powerful and pacey running, which I haven't seen that from Daniel Sturridge in quite a while. So that for me was one of the most pleasing things. I still fear that, it's not fear, but you know, Sturridge is one of my favourite players, but I still think Firmino is Klopp's go-to. I think he needs to feel he can trust Sturridge in the big games, whereas Firmino has delivered on these big games. He's not let him down. So I think Friday will be telling. As James rightly said there, I wouldn't be surprised to see potentially Coutinho come back in and Firmino be the number nine. But I'm really interested to see what Klopp does, because I think this is the first time that Sturridge is genuinely sort of staked a claim to own that shirt.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what he
does.
For
me, I think having watched Chelsea yesterday and having watched us play on Saturday, and obviously it's no, you know, way of guaranteeing that it'll work out that way, but I wouldn't be changing that front four personally.
Yeah.
You know, I would let Coutinho sit it out. And you know what? Coutinho has been good in glimpse. This is the first time that maybe Coutinho's place in the side is under threat in the last three seasons. And that's not a bad thing either.
Yeah, I think for confidence as well, you know, Klopp is saying to the players, when you get your opportunity, keep the shirt. And there's not a single player on that pitch, you know, on Saturday that deserves to lose their shirt. Right. And what message does that send them as well, that Coutinho, arguably your most talented player, can't find himself back in the side? So I think if he's to stay true to his word, I think we go with the same 11.
Lucas?
Yeah. At centre-back?
Yeah.
Oh, I like Lucas. I don't know, that's a tough one.
With the physical presence of Costa, it might make more sense to bring Lovren in alongside Matip.
Yeah, and I think what he's looked for is partnerships. We've been very, you know, we haven't been able to field a consistent partnership, you know, throughout the spine of our team for a while. And I think he's made it quite clear that he sees that partnership as Lovren and Matip. Yeah. So I would think at his first opportunity, he'll probably bring Lovren back in to get them sort of kicking on and forming that bond, you know.
Carrius. Yeah. Carrius now.
He's a beautiful man, lads.
He is a beautiful man.
I know I say this every time, but as soon as we can get him back in his big Goldilocks, I think, you know, the better.
Listen, he better be good, because, you know, picture 12 months down the line and he's still on Twitter, like, taking selfies with
Jose Enrique style selfies, and he can't get in the team.
Yeah, and he's dropping balls left, right, and centre. Like, it's not gonna ball well for him.
No, fair enough. So listen, then, you know, I suppose we, last but not least, is Mane. You know, and you know, I don't think we need to spend too long, because he was just sensational, and I don't think you're going to find anybody that's going to disagree with that. His turn of pace is, it's just blown me away. I knew he was quick, and during pre-season I saw how quick he was, and the players were talking about how much that was going to give them as an out ball. But somebody said it today, I don't know whether it was you, James, or somebody that I read was talking about not just his from a standing start, but also his ability to change pace both with and without the ball is incredible. And it really is. The more you see that, the more you realise it's a huge, huge asset for us. And I think that actually, in its sense, having the pace that he has will help Sturridge as well, because it does occupy. A lot of the problem for me was that we had relatively slow players playing in the forward, more advanced positions alongside Daniel Sturridge. And that allowed two centre halves to spend their time concentrating on him. And it made it very difficult for him. Now, Mane is able to break those lines between a fullback and a centre half, which means the centre half's occupied by him, leaving Sturridge with a little bit more space to get in and cause damage.
Yeah, it was a bit like when we had Suarez. Yeah. He occupied so many defenders that Sterling and Sturridge really, really benefit from it. And I suppose by the same account, Lallana got into space and Henderson got into space for his chance. And it was all because there's too many players for the opposition defence to worry about now.
Yeah.
Really see the sort of Klopp style coming through in how we play. When we win that ball back, everyone just runs. They literally just run dead fast. Yeah. And you're thinking, shit, it's like the Alamo, you know, just like four or five people going. And it gets you off your seat. You're like, in flashes, we are brilliant.
Yeah.
We really are. We can just shore up at the back. I think Mane, this is probably the one time, have you ever seen a player look like they belong and sort of settle in so quickly? From the first game, he was just like, give me the ball. Yeah. I belong here. This is my team.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're a fickle bunch, Liverpool fans. And to go from, why are we paying 30 million to Mane, to, oh shit, Mane's injured, what are we going to do, within about two games,
shows
the impact he has. And I think we're yet to see the full impact, because I think he's going to be the player when we have these teams that sit in deep. You know, I think he's going to be able to create, to spark, to drag people out of position to help us. And I think it was glaringly obvious when we played Burnley that he was such a massive miss for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to the Chelsea game then. James, how do you see us lining up and what would your prediction be?
Yeah, well, I think personally, I think Mignolet, I think he will keep his place. I think that's probably the right call. I think people obviously argue the case either way, but I didn't think he did much wrong at all on the weekend. I thought the save he made from Vardy, just I think it was seconds after Klopp had scolded the cop for chanting his name, was a big moment, because I think if Liverpool conceded then it could have got very nervy. Obviously he came for that long throw and missed it just before half time and had the let off when Hood said to hit the bar, but you know, by and large, I thought he commanded his box really well. And of course, Karius is waiting in the wings. But you know, I think you know, Mignolet has had a solid enough opening month of the season. I think maybe that League Cup tie at Derby will be the first time we see Karius, and then I think Klopp will have a big decision to make. I think there's a real kind of excitement, I think, about Karius. I think a lot of it is justified in terms of, you know, he was rated as one of the top young keepers in the Bundesliga, but you know, I don't really quite understand the kind of fervour to chuck him straight in and send Mignolet packing, because you know, he's still a young goalkeeper, Karius, and I don't think I'd be chucking him into Chelsea away for his Liverpool debut.
Having a Joe Hart.
Yes. I just don't think that's a change that Klopp has to make at the moment. And as the guy said before, I think Lovren will come back in. Obviously, he had a hell of a shiner from the collision in training on Friday, but he should be back and fit for Friday night. So I'd expect him to line up alongside Matip, which is clearly the kind of first choice centre back combination for Klopp, and I thought there was really promising signs in the two games they played together previously. And then I think the rest of the team almost picks itself. I don't think I'd rush Emre Can back either. I think he was due back to start full training at the start of this week. So again, you know, probably only would have had 4 or 5 days under his belt. I think he'd probably be on the bench. And then, as the guy said before, the big one is, do you change that front four? You know, personally, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably keep it as it was. And then you've got Coutinho as a wonderful option to bring off the bench if needs be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sorry, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah, Klopp has us guessing a lot these days, which is quite good. I mean, there was a time under Rodgers where the script was written, you know,
on
week.
A Wednesday.
Yeah. Do you find that James does, is it kind of, is he running a bit of a tighter ship about what he's kind of telling the media or what he's telling people than kind of back in Rogers' time?
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Yeah, I think he's, but I think he'd probably say more guarded. I think it's just different in, probably not just in terms of the two individuals, but just, you know, I think less probably gets out more, less gets out these days compared to under the previous regime, full stop. And that's not because Rogers would always give a load of information and Klopp doesn't. But I just think in terms of, you know, obviously there aren't those relationships with members of Klopp's backroom staff, for example, where maybe previously that kind of information got out. I think it was well known under Rogers that, you know, the team was always circulating on social media 24 hours at least before every game, and you know that's happening a lot less often these days. But no, he is great value, Klopp. I think it was funny. We did an interview, just a brief interview with him and Tom Werner and Mike Gordon at the main stand unveiling on Friday, and someone asked him something about, you know, whether there was pressure to deliver on the field now that the club had taken a step forward off it. And he just looked up at that stand and shook his head and just said, I am a lucky bastard. And like, I don't think Werder and Gordon knew what to do. But
he's a football fan, isn't he?
They'd all donned their finest suits for the occasion, and he had his jeans and trainers on. Yeah. So he really is one of a kind.
Yeah, he's a football fan first and foremost, and you kind of see the way he goes on the sidelines. Like, I'd be fascinated by just watching him and his every move and his every reaction. I kind of feel like, you know,
you're gonna cry again.
You know, when you're at home watching a game and you just can't sit down and you're jumping around, like he's feeling.
If he has that impact like a on fan. Us through the telly or watching the game, can you imagine what he does to his players?
What he does to the players, absolutely. Yeah. So James, in terms of a prediction for the Chelsea game, what do you reckon?
Goodness me, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think the way the Liverpool are playing at the moment, I can't see it being particularly cagey. I think we'll do some damage to them, and I think. I can't see us going there and keeping a clean sheet. I'm having watched Chelsea yesterday and seen, you know, I know obviously they, you know, a big decision went against them, but they did look vulnerable at times when Swansea finally had a go in the second half. I'd go there with a lot of optimism. You know, I think it's a game Liverpool can win. You look at the way they've played away at Arsenal, away at Tottenham so far. There'll certainly be no reason for them to fear anything. I can see it being like a 2-1 or a 3-1 win.
Okay,
good man, James.
Jamie,
I kind of agree with James. Actually, I think the thing that fills me with the most optimism is if you actually look at the games where Klopp's been manager against the top sides, we've actually got a really good record. I think John Terry's out, is he?
They don't know yet, I think.
I don't think it's looking good for him anyway. I think that will help. To be honest, I'm really confident. I think the question is, can we keep a shutout rather than can we score? I'd be very, very confident in the way that we were set up the other day that we're going to get lots of chances. And I think we've got the players to take those chances. Is it, you know, can we stop them scoring? So as James said there, I'd probably go for a 2-1 win to Liverpool.
It's interesting, like Jamie says, we shouldn't be fearing anything. If you look at the season so far, the performance against Arsenal was top class, against Spurs was top class away from home. Like, we should have probably won. Had we played Burnley at home, like we should have been playing Burnley at home, I think we might be sitting near enough top of the table. You know, so and they've had that game in the whatever you call that cup now, where they won 5-0. So they've been impressive, and again, like after that performance at the weekend, you can't not feel confident and that this football team can do great things, like, you know. So coming up against Chelsea, who have you've been a bit scrappy and scraped wins and scraped results. They were unlucky not to be beaten there at the weekend. Like, you know, it was a draw. So, yeah, I think we can go there and come away. Obviously, you can kind of concede because that's what we do. 3-2 to Liverpool. Yeah. 3-2, yeah.
You've replicated what I was going to go for. I can
but
see.
You always say 3-2.
No, I normally say 3-1.
Oh, yeah.
Today I'm switching to 3-2.
Yeah,
I think like that. I think Chelsea have the ability to do damage. Hazard was fairly poor yesterday, but, you know, he without doubt there's quality there with him. Costa looks properly bang on form again. Yeah, he does. And I think he can do damage. It'll be interesting now to see how Matip handles Costa. That's actually what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah.
But I think Courtois has looked a little bit edgy. He seems like a keeper to me who's gone backwards rather than improved massively in that time. And I think we have the ability to score. So I'm going to say 3-2 win. So, listen, we're all very positive about that.
If you look at the fixture list, once we've got this game out the way, we've got a run of winnable, what you would class on paper as winnable games.
Yeah.
And we've navigated through some pretty choppy waters.
Well, there are three very, very tough away ties. That's Arsenal away, Spurs away, and Chelsea away in the first five games.
And the champions at home as well.
Yeah, and champions at home and annihilated them.
If you can avoid defeat there on Friday night, like, you know, puts Liverpool in a really strong position after a difficult start.
Start. Okay, James, I just want to touch on a couple of other things because obviously in the last couple of weeks there's been a lot of stuff happening, and I know we were hoping to have you on over the last few weeks. We've been trying to arrange it. So there's a couple of things I want to touch on. One of them actually was you met with Alex Inglethorpe recently enough, and I was interested in him talking about how the youth setup is linked in with the you know, sort of main first team at the moment, and one of the big focal points was you talking about Kevin Stewart and just how far this guy has come. And obviously it's a player that Inglethorpe knows very well from his time at Spurs. I threw myself off there for a second, but yeah, from his time at Spurs, and he brought him to the club as a right back and immediately moved him into the middle of the park. I think that was probably one of the factors in getting him to Liverpool, wasn't it?
It was, he was. I think it's a great story with Kevin Stewart. I think he's been a bit of a late developer, really. And you think, you know, Alex Inglethorpe, we kind of obviously knew him from, he was part of his youth team at Tottenham, and he was saying about how he was either a right back or a centre half there. He said he always had the attributes to play centre midfield. He said, you know, with the competition they had in that department, he didn't really get a look in. And then, you know, once he heard he was getting released, he was straight in for him. And you know, he's had an amazing rise. When you think this time last year, Kevin Stewart was on loan at Swindon in League One, and, you know, I think it was back end of September when he got a bad knee injury and didn't kick a ball for nearly 4 months. And then, you know, obviously circumstances played into his hands in terms of the injuries Liverpool then had, and Klopp obviously recalling him and giving that chance at Exeter in the FA Cup. But he's one that's really pushed on. And I think when we came on Saturday, I think that's probably four of the first five games I think he's been involved in to some degree. And he's really earned Klopp's trust. And, you know, I think the best thing, speaking to Inglethorpe about him, was he was saying that he's just such a down-to-earth kid. I mean, even though he's Enfield born, he's a boyhood Liverpool fan. And he said, you know, he came to Liverpool for very, very little money in terms of wages initially. You know, he could have earned more money, but if he'd accepted the chance to go to a League One or a Championship club, where he probably would have gone straight into the team. But, you know, he was told that, you know, you're going to have to start the academy, you're going to have to work your way up, and he took on that challenge, and, you know, he was rewarded with a new contract, I think, back in February, March time this year. And there's just no airs and graces to him. He said, you know, he's always, you know, he said that when he was at the academy, he was the first kid in every single morning. And the last kid to leave every single afternoon, just completely devoted to his profession. He said, you know, he's still driving the same old car that he had when he first came up, despite the new contract. And he said, you know, that's just the kind of the lad he is. And you know, I've spoken to him a few times, and he's quite quiet and unassuming, and you know, he's not one who's going to be shouting from the rooftops and doesn't want a high profile, all the rest of it. But it's you know, the fact that he has established himself in the first team squad under Klopp is testament to the progress that he's made. And it was good to get down to the academy, actually, because really positive times for the place. I think, you know, I think they appreciate that. Obviously, this season's going to be more difficult to get players through, just because of the lack of game time with no Europe. But you know, there is a buzz around the place, because the kids can see that pathway through to Melwood under Klopp, and there's some really great kids as well. I think, you know, anyone who's watched the under 23s so far this season, you know, you think of Ben Woodburn and Ovie Ejaria and Trent Alexander-Arnold. You know, there's three there who impressed everyone when they stepped up to the first team in pre-season. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see at least one of those, you know, playing under Klopp at some point this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just going to ask you that about, you know, did Inglethorpe give any impression of who he saw maybe as the next one? Because let's take it that Stewart has actually established himself as part of the first team squad, albeit not a first team player yet. He's probably getting that extra game time because Emre Can is out injured at the moment. But, you know, there was a meltdown during the summer. We didn't sign a DM. We didn't sign a left back. And one of the things you've touched on, and something that I've said here as well, some of our own lads were really annoyed at the fact that those players weren't signed. But for me, and from reading your stuff there in preparation for tonight, you seem to have the same opinion, that Klopp seems to just want to wait until he has the right person. And if he doesn't have the right person to come in, he's not going to go and spend money, which we've done so many times in the past. Yeah. On the wrong person or somebody that's just a stopgap. He'd rather work with what he has until the right person is available. Does Inglethorpe see two or three more during this season maybe coming in? The likes of Alexander Arnold, who apparently yesterday was sensational at right back in the win that they had. Has he mentioned to you a couple of others that maybe he sees as the next ones to take that step up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting as well. There's something Klopp said actually last week that was kind of tied to that. And I asked him about, you know, the scale of movement they've been in the transfer window, obviously with 13 players leaving permanently and six coming in. And he said there won't be another window as busy as this. He said, but he said we needed to move on a lot of those fringe players to make sure that there was room for our young players to develop. And he said, you know, he basically said that a few players had been moved on over the summer, because he'd been so impressed by the young kids coming through, and those three we mentioned before all fit into that category. I mean, yeah. Woodburn, it's interesting because I must admit, it was probably about 2 years ago now. I was down at the academy speaking to a senior member of staff there then, and I said, "Come on, then, you know, give me one name of any of the 200 kids that are here. You know, if you had to put your mortgage on it, who would be the player that, you know, not just makes his debut, but becomes a proper bona fide Liverpool player for years to come?" And the guy then said Ben Woodburn, and he would have only been probably 14 at
14,
the time.
14, yeah.
And you know, it was just one of them ones you just log the name, and because, you know, it's obviously they're very protective. As not surprisingly, I think, you know, below the 16s and under, that don't really, there's no real publicity or anything or coverage of their games or anything. So
yeah, rightly so, really.
But yeah, there's huge excitement about Woodburn. I mean, obviously they're desperate to try and keep it under wraps. There was no chance of doing any interviews with him over the summer after games. And but he's I think he's the one. Like, I think what blew me away about him in the summer, saw him live probably three or four times in the first team friendlies, is with the kids his age, you usually see like potential, but it's very raw. But he's just not remotely raw. I think, you know, his decision making is so good, and he's quick and he's strong. And even that, you know, I think that under 23s game I was down at the Emirates the day before the Tottenham game a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember the name of the right back he was up against. Played 30 odd games for Ipswich in the Championship on loan last season, and he absolutely tormented him all night. Yeah, Woodburn's the big one. I mean, Ejaria is an interesting one because, you know, I think last season when I watched him play in the FA Youth Cup and a few other games, I was never particularly impressed, to be honest. And you know, he kind of flitted in and out of games, and he just seemed to, you know, it seemed to pass him by a fair bit. But he's kicked on massively this year, and it was interesting speaking to Klopp. Actually, he said the big moment for Ejaria, he said, was actually that warm weather training camp they had. I think it was in Tenerife back in March time when Klopp took away pretty. I think it was.
It was internationals on or something, wasn't there,
yeah,
at the time?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Ejaria was essentially included to make up the numbers because he was short on first team squad players. and Klopp said, you know, it was during that week where he was like, hang on a minute, who's this kid here? And he was on the back of that, he spent a lot more time at Melwood, and you know, and he has improved massively over the course of this year. And the same goes for Alexander Arnold. I think, you know, Klopp not buying another fullback was part of that is to do with Trent Alexander-Arnold, because, you know, Klopp rates him very, very highly. I think you know, he basically said, you know, the only thing that he's lacking is physicality. You know, I think they just need to get him on the stakes and bulk him up a little bit, because he's got everything else. You know, I think he will get an opportunity. I think he would probably be, if I was having a bet, I think probably Alexander Arnold would be the one I think he was most likely to make his debut next, because he's very highly thought of, and you know, again, you know, not just because of his talent, but because of his attitude and his application as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I suppose the next thing to do is let's, according to some Liverpool fans, let's be giantly racist and let's talk about the fact that Balotelli's gone, because it seems as though as soon as you're happy at the fact that we've moved on Balotelli, you're a giant racist, and that's the only answer for it. So you know, first of all, he's come out and said some crazy stuff last night. You know, it was the biggest mistake of his life to go to Liverpool. I saw Jim Beglin saying it was one of Liverpool's biggest mistakes as well, and he got absolutely lifted out of it by a couple of gobshites. It's just ridiculous. But you know, for someone like yourself who's been in around the club, and like you said, you chose not to report on some of the negative things you'd seen around Balotelli at the time while he was still there. It must give you a bit of satisfaction to see him finally gone, in the same way it does us.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm certainly glad he's gone, because I think he was just a bad influence around the place, you know, with his attitude and all the rest of it. And I think just the sideshow as well, I just think you just didn't need it. I think you know, it was that's why it's a relief that he's no longer a Liverpool player. But, you know, I'd love to have been proved wrong. I'd love to have seen him score 25-30 goals.
We all would, yeah.
But it was, you know, sadly, it was just one of those deals that from the start you just thought, you know, what is going on here? I was on that tour in America, was it just over 2 years ago when it first got brought up? I think Liverpool were just about to play Milan on that tour, and Rodgers was asked about it, and I can promise you he was as adamant away from the microphones as he was on the microphone in terms of, you know, we will not ever be signing someone like Mario Balotelli. and then that was why I was made to look so stupid a couple of weeks later.
Yeah, you have to feel sorry for him in that situation, don't you? Because, you know, it was such a clusterfuck in terms of how we went about finding a striker that summer. It was a disaster, and we don't need to go back over old ground, but we all know why we ended up with him. And I think everybody, you're 99% of the people out there, even people who weren't crazy on him and who said he wasn't going to be great for us, we all wanted him to succeed, like you do every single player. Whether you love a player or like a player, when they're signed, you want them to succeed for your football club.
We were at the night with Carragher and Garcia. Do you remember that?
That's right.
It pretty much emerged that this was happening. It wasn't just a rumour anymore.
No, it was about to just happen as we were at it.
And Carragher got asked, what does he think of Mario Balotelli signing for Liverpool? And his answer was, I'm not saying nothing. There's too many camera phones and shit around this room.
Yeah. He literally had the opinion that he still has at this day.
Yeah, he didn't want to say. Yeah, you know, which is fair enough. Like, you know, at the time, Carragher was probably a bit closer to the club. Now his job as a pundit is his main focus, and he kind of said he's a bit more outspoken. But you're talking about a player going in, and like yourself, James, you probably didn't want to say too much because it is the club and everything else, and you don't want too much negative press around.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, James. You take your fair share of stick on Twitter. Let's call a spade here. You know, even last night and today, I was looking at some of the shit that gets thrown at you, and not even all of it is deserved. You know,
but that's just for my missus.
I was never so blown away as the time you broke the news about Sacco, like, and the response to that, like, and I mean, you were out there in America with the team, you were close to them. You're not going to just barefaced lie in front of a camera and claim that there's all this going on when it's not going on. And there were so many people just in such denial over it. I don't know why they can't put, if anybody put the trust in a local, and I'm not trying to butter you up here in any way, but if they can't put the trust in a local journalist who's, you know, they're
doing his job.
And you know, he's close to the club, and you don't want to jeopardise that as well, and can't take that as fact. Like, you know, it was incredible, and such, like, the levels people go to, the stick, it was just outrageous, you know, and unbelievable. I don't know.
But I actually think that Sacco could kill somebody, and Liverpool fans would help him bury the body.
Yeah.
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was. I must admit, it was. You know, I was. You know, I was taken aback by just how much flack was flying on the back of that. I think my favourite one that was probably repeatable was some fella tweeting me to say that once Klopp had read my story, he had no doubt that I'd be sent home as well.
You have to love these spacers, don't you?
I mean, it's complete delusion.
That one is not as good as the fella that tweeted me after the 6-1 at Stoke, the back end of the season before last.
Yeah.
And told me that after that result, my position was untenable.
quality. Like, at the end of the day, James, and I don't think we're speaking out of turn here, you know, if you've gone away with the club and you are a reporter with the local newspaper who's been invited away, who's been around the training camps and stuff like that, you've been given that story, or the story has got to you through official means before you go writing it in your paper. Or putting it on Twitter under an official handle, you know?
Yeah. And also, you know, I'm not in a position where I can take a flyer on something and write something thinking, you know, there's probably, I'm pretty sure this is right, but I can't be 100% sure. It's, you know, it's just not the way that, you know, not the way I do things, and certainly not the way the Echo would do things. So you'd only ever write a story like that if you were 100% sure of the information you had.
If Yorgi Bear's text you himself, like,
it was funny. It was funny as well how people came to
terms. Interesting with that story was, you know, fair play to Klopp because I still think a lot of managers would. You know, a couple of days later, when he was asked about it, I think a lot of managers would have just said, all I'm prepared to say is Mamadou Sakho has gone back to England. You know, yes, he's gone back. I won't discuss it further. So, that was, and in my head at the time was, you know, if he said that, then that does leave me open to more abuse.
Looking like a plum.
So you can imagine just how relieved I was when he was sat across the table in this hotel in, I think it was in Los Angeles by that point of the tour, and you know, he was asked about it, and then he gave that answer about, you know, a lack of respect and repeatedly breaking club rules, and so it was he realised it's like he's done us a favour there.
Yeah, I tweeted at the time because it happened so quickly. You went from being this villain who was allegedly making up a slanderous story about Sacco and who nobody could say a bad word about, to Klopp verifying your story 24 hours later, and the reversing that went on Twitter. Like, and I tweeted, like, you know, is everybody going to apologise to James Pearce now? Because, man, that was just totally unnecessary. And you could see, like, it was like some sort of grieving process. Like, people have went from being, this isn't true, it's not happening, no, to now they accept it. But James Pearce is making up the rest of the stuff. What Klopp didn't confirm, that was made up. He's guessed, he's, no, this isn't happening. And now, like, his future isn't though. You weren't sensationalising. And, I mean, people just need to take a lesson from it, really, I suppose. Yeah.
Hello, this is Ronnie Whelan here, and you're listening to Tripper Chats.
Well, somebody better get down there and explain offside to her. The game's gone mad.
His knowledge of football, unsurpassed.
It was very, very disappointing.
It was bitterly disappointing, but we're very disappointed.
No, I couldn't listen to any more.
You smash it?
Still not.
You definitely smashed it.
Well, anyway, Tripper Chats, send us your questions now.
The first one comes in from a guy, James, at Gegenpress, and he says, completely innocent slash gentle question this, just exactly how great of a guy is Mamadou Sakho? So, well, like, have you met him and have you spent some time with him?
I've only got positive experience of meeting him. I was invited down to All Saints Primary School in Anfield, only a stone's throw from the ground, really, but not long after Sakho had joined, and it was him and his wife were both there, and he'd actually volunteered to become an ambassador for the LFC Foundation, and you know, he's given a lot back to the community since he's been at Liverpool, and I think you know, I can understand why fans feel such an affinity with him, because I think in an era where a lot of players are viewed as being detached from reality and from the working man on the street, I think, you know, Sakho's endeared himself to Liverpool fans with, you know, and, you know, it was, you know, doing stuff for the homeless and decorating people's walls, and he's done a lot of good things. It's just a shame that he's also made some poor decisions, and you know, hopefully he can put all that behind him now and get his Liverpool career back on track. But yeah, you'd like to think that the last 6 months have been a bit of a wake-up call for him, because, you know, I think these are exciting times for Liverpool, and he should want to be part of it. But that'll only happen if he changes his ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, we've seen it happen with players before. Bigger mistakes than this have been made, and they've recovered. So, you know, I think everybody, similarly, even the people, you know, it turned into an anti and a pro Sakho debate. It doesn't need to be that. You know, let's just hope he gets back on track and gets, you know, gets his shit together. Next one is from at a left back, and he asked all of us, really, would we rather be attractive but get punched in the face every morning, or be ugly? So there's
definitely be ugly.
You'd rather be ugly than get punched in the face every morning.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of being punched.
Fair enough. Fair. Andy?
Yeah, it's just one of them mad questions. Yeah.
What?
Punches in the face.
You take the punch in the face to be attractive. Because the
like, if you look like, if you got the choice to look like Karius or Emre Can or something like that.
Yeah,
you take a few slaps.
Just one every morning. You got up, box in the face, job done. You look like
my missus gives me one of them anyway, so I may as well look like Karius in the meantime.
But I don't know.
Fair enough.
I regularly punch myself in the face when I'm playing golf.
Yeah.
Take a bad shot and just punch yourself in the face. So,
it explains a lot, to be fair.
A few digs.
Okay, a more serious one then comes in from at Sean J. Pugh, and he asks, James, in your opinion, are FSG the right owners for the club, and can we win a title under their ownership?
That's a good question. I certainly don't subscribe to the idea that they're bad owners. I think, you know, again, you know, it's, you know, you, obviously opinion will be divided on it, but, you know, I don't think they've ever kind of failed to deliver on something they've promised to do. I think from when they came in, they said, you know, this, we're not going to be sugar daddies. We just want to improve the way the club is run. We want to improve revenues. We want to, you know, improve it across the board. We're going to sort out the stadium issue, which obviously they have done now. I can understand the frustration, because you see Liverpool spending dwarfed by you know, the likes of City and United and Chelsea. But, you know, I think they have done a lot of good for the club. Whether they can get the club where they want it to be, I think if it's going to happen, it will happen under Klopp, because, you know, he is the perfect man for Liverpool. You know, I think some of the criticism of FSG this summer has been misplaced, in terms of, you know, this idea that Klopp has been denied money to spend is just not true. You know, Klopp has, you know, Klopp speaks from the heart. I don't think he's not an actor. He doesn't put on a show. You know, he is absolutely adamant that he's been able to do what he wanted. You know, you look at his past. He's not the kind of manager. You know, he was asked about, I think it was on an interview during the tour, it was, you know, would you sign a Pogba for 90 million? And he, you know, and he was he was saying, you know, I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it a different way. This is the way I want to do it. I want to develop players. I think the quote was, I'm not interested in who the best player in the world was last season. I want to try and work out who's going to be the best player in the world next season.
Mm.
Obviously it's interesting at the moment as well, the ownership issue with so much speculation doing the rounds. I mean, I can only go by from everyone I speak to connected with FSG, including people very high up, are absolutely adamant it's complete rubbish, this stuff about the Chinese takeover. I think it's no secret that they were open to the idea of selling a minority stake. So that'll be interesting to see whether that happens in the next 12 to 18 months. But I certainly don't think, I don't think FSG's reign is going to come to an end at any time soon. People will debate whether their vision can bring the kind of success that they want. But, I tell you what, I think, they've got the right man. If anyone can make it happen, then it'll be Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't disagree with you. Okay, we'll make it a little bit more. It's actual toilet humour this time. At Belfast Copite asks us, do we flush the toilet just before we have a pee?
Pee?
Yeah. So do you flush it and then like race it to see can you finish your pee before the toilet finishes flushing?
That's a new one. Like
I've been guilty of that one.
I'd have an old toilet race the odds.
Is that a thing? No, yeah. I always thought the rule was like if you go to like a new girlfriend's house and like you need to drop the kids off at the pool, you flush the toilet as they jump into the pool and there's no smell. It gets rid of the smell. So if you,
like there's a vacuum.
Yeah, literally gets rid of the smell so you can walk out feeling fresh and not worried that your new missus, mum and dad are going to see that you've dropped a bomb in the toilet. Yeah. But I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's just surely for your own enjoyment. Like there's no major thoughts behind it.
When I was a little kid, I did a high one, like to see how high you could wait.
I'd say your mum loved that, did she? Yeah?
No, in the school urinals, not at home. Like,
all right, because she
plastering the wall.
Do you ever race it yourself, James? No, you're a toilet racer.
I can't say I have, no. I'll have to give that a go.
No, fair enough. We'll finish up with this one. It's Gary at Shaw _LFC. And he says, James, what did you think when Lucas tweeted you?
But you know, the funny thing is, I was actually doing LFC TV's press box at the time. So it was, I had my phone was off. And obviously then I was jumping in a car to drive to... I think it was to Burton for the League Cup tie. So it was one of the ones where I turned the phone back on and I knew I'd missed something significant by just how much it was buzzing. and then I won't say who it was, but let's just say another journalist who covers Liverpool, I picked up his message first and it just said, don't rise to the bait, take some deep breaths or something.
Right.
So I thought, what the hell does he mean by that?
Yeah.
And then I looked on Twitter and then realised. Do you know what? In fact, I actually had a conversation with Lucas after the game on Saturday, and everything's all fine between us now.
Cool.
I think he was pretty clear. he was frustrated that I'd mentioned him staying in a story about Sacco, potentially going, because I think on the back of that, he'd had a lot of abuse from idiots on Twitter saying, for God's sake, because you're staying...
Yeah, fuck off, Lucas, now.
And I tried to explain to him that wasn't...
The intention.
Certainly, I didn't write it like that. And also, it was a roundup of what was...
Yeah,
that
you were
morning.
Just saying that his move was most likely off because of what had happened with Sacco. Klopp wanted to keep him around as extra cover.
And he's looked upon as a valued squad player who can play centre midfield or centre back. And I think Lucas felt that, he felt that it was he'd been almost made to look like the bad guy because
it was his fault.
Sacco. which I can understand his point, but he's thankfully we've
squared that one off.
We've moved on and we're mates again.
It's interesting to know, like, that the players, especially like Lucas, he's on Twitter a long time, and he seems to notice and pick up on an awful lot of the stick he's getting. And I think if I was a professional footballer, I'd avoid reading my mentions.
Yeah, I can't imagine, unless I was Luis Suarez or someone like that. I can't imagine if I was Lucas, I'd.
But there's going to be any amount of opposition fans like just throwing all sorts of abuse your mother and your sister and your missus and your kids.
When I used to play non-league, I'd go.
You
on
played
to,
football, Jamie. You've I never, did, mentioned,
never mentioned
mate.
It.
No, no.
Yeah. I used to go on to the threads and like the 30 fans that would go and watch the game. You'd get the odd bit of abuse. Yeah. I definitely did make up a fake profile and be like, "That lad in the middle had a decent game today," and no one would reply. Like,
oh, what about that Holmes young lad?
Bit of all right.
Good, eh?
Silence. Tumbleweed. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. Listen, we'll wrap it at that. Okay, so let's have our little outro. As always, we'd like to say thanks to the Astra Park Tala for the use of the facilities here and the bunker, your place to go for all of your five-a-side needs in South Dublin. Your trippers tonight were Andy Young, Jamie Holm. We were delighted to be joined by James Pearce from the Liverpool Echo and myself, Stephen Daly. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
I can't believe we asked him, did he do the piss game?
Fuck it, I'll scrap him if I have to.
Be no problem to you.
You're a fucking warrior, pal. Tank.